The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to Motorpod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode 293.1 for Wednesday, 5th of October, 2011. I'm here, this is Jules Cusack, I'm here with Jim Race. This is actually take two of this show. We had some technical difficulties the first time around, so here we go again. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing well. Hopefully you guys can hear me a bit. We'll see if we can't get through this here for you once again. Hopefully one of these days we'll, in the meantime, we'll do what we can.
Right. Neither sleet or snow or lack of internet is going to stop us from getting a show out. So,
yeah.
As always, we're going to start with Rada from last week. This time it was actually in the show notes that we made a mistake. We misspelled the... our friends who provided us with those awesome interviews from Ducati. And by the way, those really were fun to listen to. And thanks for working on those, Jim.
Sure.
The actual name of the company is Edelman UK, and they work with Puma Motorsports. And Puma Motorsports actually has a Facebook page, so we'll have a link to that as well in the show notes this week. And apologies for the misspelling. No listener feedback this week. We actually had a bunch of emails that we kind of covered in email. I don't think anything that was really worthy of continuing in the show. So let's just get into this fantastic weekend of racing we had. Like we were talking earlier, is that it kind of didn't stop because we had, you know, Japan time for MotoGP and France for World Superbikes. It was kind of like, you know, I was up all day Saturday was something racing related, and then, you know, got a little bit of sleep, and then again back to racing. So it was kind of cool.
Yep. Well, this especially happens for us here in the States with the Pacific Rim rounds, and while we appreciate having that stuff so early in the afternoon, as it were, you know, or late evening, much as you folks in the Europe have. I haven't got to say that for a while.
Yeah.
It certainly does impinge on our normal sleeping habits. But it's funny. I couldn't watch the races, so I was actually watching live timing and scoring on my phone, which is kind of a sad way to do it, but I did manage to catch a couple of championships get wrapped up this weekend just through timing and scoring, which for me was kind of cool. We did have a bunch of other stuff that kind of main news that we want to talk about, though, before we kind of get into the races themselves. You were talking, and before, and I'll drop into this and you can carry on with me. Andrea Dovizioso is kind of still unsure where to sign for 2012, either with LCR or Tech 3. I believe he is Tech 3's number one pick, with a couple of other guys down the road. There's about five that are in line for that potential position. And then LCR is also an option for him. And it was kind of interesting seeing two LCR bikes on the grid there in Motegi. But it is a question, you know. Jules, we were talking earlier about factory support and, you know, what they'll have for LCR. And I'm kind of looking forward to see, with a little bit of trepidation, you know, the sort of bump off that he got this year he was brought back to Repsol, obviously, because he had that in his contract for 2011, but a little bit grudgingly, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
And so to see what kind of support that he might get, it being a factory bike or a pseudo factory bike or a real factory bike, could be interesting to see what Honda actually puts forth. You know, it was earlier this in this year that we were talking about Honda scaling back the number of bikes completely on the grid. And now
yeah,
it sounds...
Because I mean, we talked about earlier this year that, you know, maybe Ducati will need to step up in the... You know, what about Yamaha? Why doesn't Yamaha provide more bikes? But Honda's been upping the game. I think part of it is that they have a fantastic machine. But when you were saying that about the grudgingly thing, I remember thinking I was visualizing like Dovizioso pointing out like literally with his finger pointing to the part of the contract where it said that he was going to get a Repsol ride, you know,
right?
And then they go and sign Stoner, and he's sitting there going, "Look, we already have a contract, and you guys, you know, not going to break it." Blah 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 blah. Here it says I'm going to be the number three guy, right? I mean, I'm going to be not the number three guy, but a Repsol guy, full on HRC, you know, the same bits that Danny Pedrosa and Casey Stoner get.
Right. Well, I mean, let's be fair. They have honored. To any extent you can see possible, the full of that. And if you think about it, they could have given him a bike that was, you know, it 0.95% as good as the other guys. But it seems to me they've given him a bike that's equally as good. And
certainly this weekend.
Yeah, and as well as a team structure that is there to win races, and you know that's kind of the flat of it. So a three rider team this strong hasn't been seen in, well, I don't know, go back, when was the last time we had a three-man team all under the same corporate and sponsorship?
Crevier and Nakata.
Yep. But they weren't running 1-2-3 all the time, were they? Well, doing
was like one time where they were. I mean, they definitely had the same equipment.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was very. It took a toll on, not necessarily the racing division, but definitely took a toll on the teams, because they were competing. Obviously, you're always competing the most with your teammates. So now they were competing amongst each other, and so that it must take a toll on the mechanics,
yeah,
and especially on the riders.
Certainly,
a lot of competition there along the way, and of course, you know, Simoncelli is definitely signed with Gresini, and he's going to have factory support, whatever that means for a satellite team. It's definitely not 100% what Repsol get, but pretty close. You know, obviously pretty close. And on top of that, Simoncelli got to test the 1000 on Monday. So Honda definitely believes in the guy. And I think it bears repeating what you said earlier about his sellability.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is that, you know, Sideshow Bob is going to sell more product than Chill Out Debbie.
And that's yeah. I mean, it's exactly right, because even Dovi puts it, I mean, admits it himself. He keeps saying, I just feel like I'm just not interesting enough that my results don't speak for myself. But, you know, he also doesn't win races. If he won races consistently, I think any lack of personality would be forgiven.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So, all right. So let's keep moving on then, because we could probably talk about Devi and Simoncelli for an entire 2 hours. A little bit more stuff. Testing news, upcoming testing news, especially with the changes that are going to occur in the testing schedules. We do have Carlos Checa, who was announced to be testing the GP12. That is post Valencia, correct? Or is that in the upcoming? No, I believe it's post Valencia, right?
I actually don't know.
Okay. It kind of, in a way, it kind of does matter and is germane to the rest of what we might talk about here, or part of it. You know, whether or not it's actually providing development time leading up to, you know, helping Ducati either finish out the season and, or just, you know, and I say just and I should throw quotes around that, handing him the opportunity to celebrate his championship. These are guys that have had the opportunity. And when I say guys, I believe Josh Hayes is going to get a chance to ride the Tech 3 bike, Collins Tech 3 bike. These are guys that not only have won championships, be them national or international, but have a lot of experience on a lot of different bikes. What can they bring to the table? Kind of an interesting question, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Chick has been obviously in the GPs for a long time and in a top class for a long time. I mean, he's ridden Yamahas, both two strokes and four strokes. He's ridden the Ducati, of course, in the 990s configuration, and he's ridden the Honda. So
yep.
It's a lot of different machines, and even though the bikes have changed a lot, I mean, there are some things that have remained the same. Lars Caparossi says that the 800 Ducati is not exaggerated the problems that he was already seeing on the 990. So, you know, the character stays kind of. So maybe, you know, the feedback will definitely mean something.
Yeah, and it's a question of what their intention is to apply that to. Be it the design and configuration of the bikes for next year, or feedback on what they may or may not have done right this year. Either way, it's still going to feed into the future, and I think that's pretty cool. On another testing note, we do know that Nikki Hayden had just gotten back to the USA post Motegi, and got a call from Europe saying, can you get over here right away? Because Valentino Rossi, who had his crash at Motegi, apparently also damaged a finger that was rebroken from I believe a 95 crash. I'm trying to remember where I garnered this.
1995? Yeah. Like before he was racing in GPs?
I believe so. Wow. 95, maybe 2006. I'm not sure when crashes occur, but
that's about 11 years difference right there.
I know
for a fact that he broke his wrist in Assen.
I believe it was a finger, and I think I read it on GP1, or I don't remember where I heard it or read it, but regardless. Rossi's finger was too swollen, too painful to actually test the bike, and so Hayden has been called over to Europe, to carry on the test for the GP12. I may have read it on
quote David's. Quote GP12, which then immediately turns into a GP11 as soon as the test is over.
Yeah, you surround it with multiple quotes and several parentheses and curly brackets. they'll appeal to the programmer friends of ours out there. But anyway, he's been sucked back in, so Nick didn't get very much time in the OWB, but he is back on European soil and getting ready to ride whatever configuration they give him, be it a twin spar, dual, twingle, whatever. He's going to be back on and doing comparisons of whatever Ducati is planning for 2012.
Now, here's an interesting thing. This is the seventh of their 8 days of testing, I believe.
Yep.
Is that for the calendar year?
No, because they're going to have a little bit of time. No, because they're going to have a little bit of time.
So once the Valencia race is over, they start to get a new set of days, which is going to be nine this time.
Right, but it goes up until the end of November or something like that. I don't have the testing schedule in front of me, and then they have the full winter lockout.
Reappears
near the end of January. They get back underway again.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Cool. Okay, and the final bit, which is really finally a relief, is that the fastest premiere is October 14th for the U.S., and it's going to be in Los Angeles and I believe in Las Vegas as well.
I'm pretty sure it's the big one, and I'm not even sure if there is going to be one in L.A., is in Vegas.
Okay. It is just in Vegas.
Yeah, that is October 14th.
Yep.
They are having a contest to bring one person out and giving away a bunch of posters and things like that. I actually entered the contest, which which is funny because I think if I probably sent an email to Martin Gill and said, I'll catch a plane out there to Vegas, he would have said, ah, come on out and we'll have you there. But I entered the contest anyway, just for fun. And you can too. I think you can do it online. We'll try and find that for you. I know you can do it through Facebook.
Well, it's on Fast as a Movie. There's a link for the Las Vegas contest.
Yeah. So, fasterthemovie.com.
There's still no word on the other, on the release in like New York, the Bay Area, or anywhere else besides Vegas. So hopefully we'll know soon.
Yep. Indeed. But looking forward to it. Whether I can actually get to Vegas the weekend from this is another question. But I figured I'd enter.
All right. Right. So we'll start with 125s. The interesting stuff already happened in qualifying because Zarco was on pole and Tirol was third behind his teammate for Bell, so it looked very much like it was going to be another fight with, very similar to Aragon, where for Bell played wingman to Tirol, and once Tirol got ahead. Now, of course, this is assuming that Tirol could get ahead of Zarco, since the roles were reversed last time Tirol was on pole. But the really kind of nasty thing that happened was that Sergio Gadea had a really bad crash during qualifying. He fractured two lower back vertebrae, and for a while it looked like he may have to get his spleen removed. As a result of his injuries, he couldn't fly because the pressure changes in the airplane were going to cause some kind of problems for him. So he was kept in Japan for an extra couple of days. He's still there, in fact. They moved him to a hospital for those... tracking radiation distance. It was actually further away, south towards Tokyo, about halfway between Motegi and Tokyo. So, but it then turned out that his spleen does not have to be removed, which is a huge relief. Obviously, Carlos Checker rides with that when he wins world championships, but it's probably nice to be able to keep all your bits.
It kind of makes you wonder because the spleen doesn't do a whole lot. And
I dated this girl who didn't have one, and she was hot.
Yeah, but I mean, if they're thinking about, well, we're not sure if it's not like it's your lung or a liver, we're gonna take your spleen. We're not sure if we're gonna take the damn spleen out, would you?
Exactly. And then Jonas Folger got his RSA back from Danny Kent, because if you remember earlier in the season, Folger either got sick or there was some kind of dispute. It was really kind of unclear, but Danny Kent got the Aprilia RSA, which is the factory bike, basically, and Folger had to ride Danny's bike. Didn't do terrible on it, but as soon as he got it back, he was only eighth in qualifying, but he did even better in the race. But the race itself was a strategy battle, like we kind of expected. Johann Zarco obviously has had some pretty interesting season because with his
antics.
Well, he's gotten over the line before. To roll in the past and then had the results called back, and there was that photo finish result, and then of course the look back thing that happened a few rounds ago. So but even before we got started, Vinales is another kind of revelation this season. He had a problem with the chain, I believe, and he had to run back to the pits and did not make it back to the pit to the for the warm-up lap, so he had to start from the back of the grid. And, of course, in 125s, that's, you're way back. He had qualified in fourth position, so he was on the second row, and suddenly he's starting from 36th, way, 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 way in the back. So we got off on the way, and by the sixth lap, he was already ninth. So he was furiously trying to make up spaces for it. Meanwhile, up front, it was Alterol, Fabel, and Zarco. Eventually, Fabel fell off the pace, and it was just Zarco and Tyrrell. Zarco finally caught up with Tyrrell on the bottom of the hill at turn 11, which is really the scariest place to make a pass. But of course, you know, as boneheaded as he's been this year, and from time to time, man, that guy can really ride well. He's ice cold out there on the track. You know, there was a little bit of pushing. I don't know if you remember that, but there was a little bit of pushing under the bridge that kind of reminded me of the Rossi Lorenzo battle, although it didn't last quite as long. And then Zarco stayed in front, and he won. So he finally broke that duck, or I don't know how you say that, but
streak.
The bad streak of winless, the winless streak, and he finally won the race. And but Tyrrell was happy to come in second because he only bled 5 points, and he's still 31 points ahead, which is more than the win. When with three rounds remaining, it's going to be tough for Zarco to catch up. But you know, he really wanted this. He really needed this. He was so happy, and I was actually like thinking, like, what was the last time we heard the French national anthem on the podium in GPs? And so, you know, because the last time I was thinking was 2008 when Mike DiMeglio won the championship at 125s. And I tweeted about that, and somebody mentioned that I completely forgot about the fact that Jules Cluzel won at Silverstone last year.
True. And you don't watch the Red Bulls Rookie Cup, which I actually watch fairly often.
That's true, I don't, but yeah. I don't consider that the GP necessarily.
Well, it runs on the same time, same weekends.
But yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Careful, now you don't want to alienate anybody. You know, I actually have to wonder, interesting that he had that chain episode. Always need to do the chain episode.
Vinales, yeah.
Yeah, and I always mean to do this, and I've done it with 250s, 500cc bikes, the 990s, and I've identified those by eye. But I always kind of wonder what size chains most of the 125 guys are in. I'm guessing, you know, at the most, maybe, you know, a 520, but there may be guys out there with 428s and smaller even. So if there's somebody out there that knows, and I'm sure there is, send us an email to motopod@motopodcast.com and tell us. I'm curious.
Yeah, actually, that's cool. I also be interesting to see what kind of, you know, drive ratio they have on the final drive.
Yep. But certainly the chains. My guess is 428s or some other exotic number that you can't order out of, you know, a Tsubaki catalog. But right. I am curious.
Right.
Cool.
And speaking of Vinales, he actually ended up fourth. He was fourth by lap 13, but the only thing is that Fabel, Tyrrell, and Zarco were so far ahead of the rest of the field. He actually was within 3 seconds, or even 2.5 seconds, of Fabel by the end. I think with two more laps, he may have even caught him because he was gaining on him super fast, and Fabel was fading. But Maverick Vinales is incredible. 36th to fourth. That was really unbelievable seeing him do that, and he really cut those guys up too doing it.
And he's leaving Paris, isn't he?
What's that?
He's leaving Paris. He's jilting her for a new lover.
Well, we don't know that, right? VQR Blue Sense. I mean, isn't that who Paris Hilton co-sponsors with?
ABR Vintax or whatever like that. It's a Well, I guess, yeah, I guess it was a Bluesons team, sort of.
We don't know basically if she's going to be a sponsor or not, period.
True.
But he has
true.
Signed with Bluesons BQR for Moto 3 in 2012, which is awesome news. I mean, you know, there was no doubt that somebody good was going to sign him. I have nothing to say.
Well, that's when you should stop, Jules.
exactly. Anyway, Zarco on the top of the podium for the first time in his career. It was great to see. Championship's still doable, you know. Nicholas Stoller has 261 points. Johann Zarco has 230. Maverick Vinales with 190. Sandro Cortese, 180. And Jonas Folger, 140. Jonas, by the way, finished in sixth position. So he made good of that bike. Although Danny Kent, you know, finished ninth. So even on the older bike, it was not too bad. It was apparently Jonas Folger had problems getting used to the Danny Kent setup during the weekend. So he was kind of starting on the back foot. But by the time they were finished with qualifying, he kind of got it back to where he used to have it.
I think the thing that we're massively hoping for is that we still have a championship to decide come Valencia. And
well, we've got Moto2. So let's talk about Moto2.
All right, let's do that.
Yeah, so obviously in Moto2, the championship is on a razor's edge, which is, I mean, fantastic. And but unfortunately for Stefan Bradl, Mark Marquez was on pole, and Stefan Bradl was not even on the second row this time. He was eighth. So it was Thomas Luthi and Andrea Iannone who joined Marquez on the front row, with Bradley Smith, Takahashi, and Corsi on the second. And I thought this race, as much as it shows how talented Marquez is over the last, you know, God knows how many rounds, it really, to me, showed what an incredible fighter Bradl is, because I think Bradl really is the underdog in that battle between Marquez and Bradl. Say all you want about how far back Marquez had to come from, but in terms of money and all this extra testing time that Marquez gets, and obviously the backing of, you know, everyone involved, I think. I think Bradl's the one that's got a bigger mountain to climb. Not taking anything away from Marquez at all. He's a freaking brilliant rider, but I'm rooting for Bradl because Marquez is going to do this over and over in the future. I don't know about Bradl. This is his only chance.
Would you have said the same thing 7 races into the season?
What's that?
Would you have said the same thing 7 races into the season?
7 races into the season. Let me think of what the positions were like. I mean, the gap was big, but Marquez was coming. I mean, he had already won a couple of races by then, and but it wasn't really until he got all that extra testing time that I was started, and then you know, a GP ride, that I really started realizing he's being groomed, and he's going to get anything that is needed to help him in this championship.
Yeah, that far into the season, he had, what, 3 DNFs, 2 wins.
I'm not trying to take anything away from Marquez. It just really feels at this point. Aside from one of those DNFs, the DNFs were his own fault, Marquez, right? And he's bounced back, so he's obviously, you know, refocused, and he's an incredible rider. Like I said, I'm not taking that away from him. I'm just saying that Bradl's the underdog. In this particular fight, I wanted to see the underdog win. That's all.
Okay.
Anyway, as far as the race itself, it was Iannone who got his brilliant start, and I think the announcers even thought that he had jump started, but he didn't. Just really good start.
I think he did. I think he did just as much probably as Dovi did. Or anybody else? But
No. There was no roll, stop, whatever. It was just a. No, I did look at it, and from the angle that we get to see, it looked very inconclusive to me. Whereas the Dovi one was like so incredibly obvious. But anyway, and then Bradl got to was fourth by the end of lap 2, and then. Iannone looked like he may be just running away with it, but Marquez put his head down, caught him, hit the front on lap 8, and then they got into a nice little battle, him and Iannone. For a couple of laps, they were going back and forth. Brattle took Corsi for third, and even got into in front of Marquez, but that didn't last very long. The really weird thing was we were getting towards the end of the race, and Iannone had that strange problem where he just rolled off the throttle and kind of was looked like the engine died or the bike had died, and it was over for him.
My theory was as soon as he went under the tunnel, the link to the satellite, which was actually controlling the bike, was blocked. and therefore the bike and the robotic rider, who clearly is, because the man rides like he is getting signals from afar, from another alien planet, no longer were connected, and he just looked down and said, oh, fuck, what am I going to do?
It was really wild. So the running theory is that he completely misshifted and had to kind of find himself back, because he came back, you know, and then he ended up winning the
race.
Came
back hard.
Which was, yeah. What's that?
He came back hard, big time.
He came back so hard. He came back really hard, repassed Marquez on lap 20 and did not relinquish. At that point, he kind of pulled away, won by 2 seconds. Brattle's good buddy, Thomas Luthi, did not help him out. He put a hard move on him and passed him for third.
He pretended like he was going to for quite some time, but I think at a certain point he probably said, "Well, you know, I've got the pace, and they're not on the same team, obviously. And Luthi's certainly got to make sure that he's got a contract for next year.
And not he's only got, that, but with Corsi and Angelis coming up strong, like you know,
yeah. Who wants to ride around with Corsi and De Angelis on your ass? I mean,
exactly.
Let's put a speed bump between me and them. That certainly didn't finish it out though, and Brattle wasn't done, and you know you were kind of waiting for something else to happen, the last four or five laps of that race were great. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, totally edge of the seat. I mean, of course he took Brattle. I was like, oh my god, he's going to do the same thing again that happened in Aragon. He's going to lose all his spots in the last couple of laps, but that boy really held together. I was just amazed. It was pure willpower from Brattle. He was really riding on the edge at the very end, and did take that fourth, which of course means that that he's no longer the leader in the championship.
Nope.
Because he bled won too many points, and now Marquez is up by one in
and
the
I
championship.
I was totally chuckling when they were trying to keep track of who was up and who was down, and you know, it's plus one, minus two, plus three, minus four, plus one, minus two.
Oh my god, that was hilarious! And there was actually a lot of errors in the graphics. I don't know if you caught earlier when they were the temperature was 32 degrees Fahrenheit and 0 degrees Celsius for a while.
Well, you know, these things happen. perhaps the guys that were doing the stats were underneath the bridge as well.
There you go. And then Martin added a note saying that DeAngelis had a good finish, considering that his team actually opted to stay home.
Yep, that's right.
They were one of the few teams that just said we're not going. The Japanese TSR Racing Japanese Series chassis maker spun the wrenches in their stead. These are Martin's words, and good on them. So I mean that's amazing because they got a sixth place finish.
Yep, indeed.
Very very cool. Okay.
All right.
Moto 2. I mean, we're kind of rushing through this because I'm losing my voice. I've been sick for the last couple of days, and Jim is in the middle of nowhere. You know. Being attacked by deer and bears, I think.
Well, and we're in the middle of a great big downpour. I doubt if you guys will. You might catch some of that on my recorded audio. But I was like, "Whoa, that's impressive."
Oh, so you have what we had this morning, probably just a deluge, just boom.
Yeah, We got that too, but we've had these cells coming through, and I was, when that started, I was kind of looking at my phone going, will this actually carry on? But you and I are doing a bit of a, yet another guerrilla type recording here, recording there, piece yep. it all back, to get together later. So.
Exactly. You know, and actually we forgot to mention the fact that, you know, we are in Motegi, and, you know, there was obviously a lot of, kind of, drama leading up to this, to this event. And, you know, teams saying that they're not going to go, riders threatening to boycott the race, even to the very bitter end, they were sending, you know, independent teams of people to check it out. There was worry about radiation in the food. Teams brought their own food. Dorna said, please don't do that because it's going to delay you in customs. Just a whole bunch of little bits of drama. One of the funniest things I've heard is that Jorge brought water to shower with and that Danny Pedrosa left all his clothes in Japan.
I heard some funnier things actually.
Can you repeat them? Because I've heard some other funny things that I'm not sure I'm supposed to repeat.
I know at least one person that attended brought their own Geiger counter.
Oh yeah, yeah. Actually, they actually mentioned that on the MotoGP feed. Mary Spies yep. had her own Geiger counter.
Yeah, she did.
I think that's awesome. You know, she's a mom. She's got to take care of a kid, right?
True. And, yeah, well, you know, clearly they didn't irradiate his food on the way over properly because he showed up this weekend sick as a frickin' dog.
Yeah, he had food poisoning.
Bad.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Right. So, moving on to MotoGP, since we kind of did already. Qualifying was... Casey Stoner, Jorge Lorenzo, the fly in the ointment of Honda all weekend long, and Andrea Dovizioso in the front row. No Danny Pedrosa. Danny Pedrosa was in fourth on the second row, along with Ben Spies and Marco Simoncelli. So those Yamahas really, really did well because aside from Jorge in the later free practice, it was looking like Honda. Even Aoyama was up there.
Well, let's be fair. Motegi is Honda's track.
Yeah, I know. It's a Honda track that where Honda has not won since 2003. So, you know, Honda track might not mean that much, especially because, wait a second. You know, people have been saying that all weekend, but didn't Makoto Tomada win in Motegi?
2006, I believe it was.
2004 on the Bridgestones.
Okay.
Yeah, he did. He won in Rio and in Motegi, didn't he?
Oh, you have the pornographic memory, not me.
Pornographic, nice. so anybody who was saying it was 2003 since Honda won there, I guess maybe they're talking about Repsol team. Anyway. Back to the present. So that was the qualifying, and So I was just going to say that Rossi was on in seventh place on the third row, which doesn't sound that much better than he's been, but you got to remember there's a couple times where he's been like, you know, 14th and did okay. And most importantly, they really felt that they had found something towards the latter stages of FP3, and especially when it got cooler in warm up after qualifying, they finished fourth, which, you know, doesn't mean that much, except they knew that in the cooler temperatures they actually would have a chance, and the temperatures stayed cool throughout race day. Let's go to the race. You ready? Oh my God, you sound like a little kid. Yeah.
That's because I was 40 feet away.
You left me here.
I did, just for a moment. Sorry.
Are you going to flush a toilet now or what?
No, because now I'm 40 feet away from the toilet.
It was great to see the stands fill out. There were 34,000 fans, which is about, what is it, about 16 times as many fans as most of the Italian media predicted. So, and it's also 16 times, and there was about 16 times less Italian media there. And I believe there were like two Italian.
And seven times the average attendance of a Qatar round.
Yeah, exactly. So really good to see that, and it really started to fill out during the MotoGP race. And there were, you know, I was looking at the photos that Critter posted on Ride On 2 forums. If you guys remember those forums, are still alive. They're still doing really well. There's lots of great discussion going on over there, and there were all these, you know, kind of poignant little moments where, like, Casey Stoner is looking at the TV, and on the TV there's a bunch of fans holding up a sign saying "Welcome to Japan" or "Thank you for coming to Japan." It was very cool, and I think a lot of the writers ended up being very kind of humbled by it. You know, how could you not be when you arrive and the welcome is warm? You know, there was nobody in other countries. I have a feeling there would have been like a little bit of resentment because of all the trepidation about the race even happening. You know,
true. So
the Japanese are just a lovely people. So that was, I think that it was very cool that everybody came, and that and they kind of got to see that. Anyway, there was no Adriana on the grid. A lot of people were commenting on how she changed. She seems to have changed, but it was actually, it was the first time I think that I've seen Casey Stoner with someone other than her in eight, like since I really started paying attention to his racing, you know. Whoa, that's pretty chauvinistic of me.
Carry on.
Yeah. Right. Right from the beginning. So you know, you guys have heard, seen, read about this race. I'm not going to spend too much time on it. But, I mean, it was obviously incredibly drama and bizarreness-filled race. Right from the start. Because it was a jump start on the right side of the track. I think that... you know, Dovi jumped the start, and the guys behind him saw him jumping the start, so they jumped the start. So it affected
Simoncelli,
yeah, and Cal Crutchlow.
Much like Iannone's jump start in Moto2.
Yeah, that's right. It also affected Simoncelli and Crutchlow, or Dovizioso, right?
Yeah.
And they eventually got caught. I mean, it was obvious they were called in. There was some kind of miscommunication because I believe the rules state that you can only bring in one rider at a time, so you don't have any danger of collisions in the pits. But Dovi and Simoncelli came in at the same time.
Frankly, Cal came in right after them on the same lap, but he had been so far, much farther behind.
That's true. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And there was actually an image of a guy holding up a board, and all three numbers were on it.
Yeah, and it kind of looked like a Scrabble board when I first saw it.
Yeah. And somebody brought up a good point: is, you know, if you're going to do a drive-through, then why bother? You know, pulling back on the false start. Just okay, you false start. You know, you false started. Just go with it. Run with it.
Well, because they're not always called.
Every time in MotoGP, they're so strict. They've been so strict that you move on the grid, and they call you. Remember what happened to James Tozzi in Laguna Seca a couple years ago? I mean, you could barely see him move. and they call, he got called in.
They didn't call Iannone.
Oh my God! This, I think that's maybe have to be the title of the show.
There you go. Yeah, we should have a haiku contest about it. But I mean,
so, you know, but, actually, the title of the show is going to be "What If," and that fits in perfectly. What if they had called in Iannone? And then, you know, I mean, there was so much jump starting this whole weekend because we even had some in superbikes. Anyway.
You know, I actually have to wonder if that the reasoning for the rule of not calling them in all at once, besides the fact that your point is well taken, that crowding, you know, one, two, three guys in at once through pit in, which is obviously a much more narrow lane and usually has a large chicane to get them onto the pit lane, might not have harkened back to the days when there was no speed limit in pit lane, or the speed limit was much higher. And so maybe there was even more concern back then. I mean, but if you think about it, the danger of doing that kind of maneuver is far less because you're not going to have an entire grid getting a jump start, although frankly that'd be pretty exciting, as much as going from a dry race to a wet race, where you've got guys coming in and changing bikes, which is way more scary.
Absolutely right. This is a really, really good point. I think you're right. I think that it's an old rule, and maybe it doesn't even exist anymore. That totally makes sense. Flag to flag race. That stuff is crazy.
Yep.
Very, very good point. Okay, and then, you know, the craziness was just beginning because Valentino Rossi on turn one managed to kind of push Nicky off into the dirt a little bit, and then he was obviously very impatient to get going with this thing, and I'm actually surprised that there was not more of this ridiculous analysis that always happens whenever Rossi's involved in any kind of incident. Remember how many different viewpoints there were when he took the Stoner down in Jerez. So what happened here is he was trying to get past Lorenzo, and he went into a spot where he didn't think Lorenzo was going to go, but Lorenzo took a slightly wider line through T3, and unfortunately for Rossi, Ben Spies was on his outside, also heading kind of into that same direction. So he got into a Yamaha sandwich, and his brake lever got touched, and so he went straight down, slid out. Amazing, he didn't take out anybody. Obviously, Spies went off with him and lost a bunch of spots, but did not lose the bike, was able to get back on the track. But Rossi was not, and the bike was down, dead, and there was an image that somebody from MotoGP, one of the MotoGP photographers, caught that I think kind of really summarizes the season, where Rossi ran up to the bike and kind of just sat down next to it with his head on the bike, and yeah, that's... And it, you know, it broke his 25 consecutive point scoring streak, which is the fifth longest in MotoGP history.
It did,
which is amazing considering what a shitty season he's been having that he's been finishing, because he's fallen off I think twice and still finished the race in points. And then Barbara crashed out on lap two. And he got pretty beat up too. He was actually not moving when they put him on the stretcher. It looked like a bad crash. Turned out that he took a blow to the head and was unconscious for a little bit, but he's fine. He's back in Spain. He had surgery for a fractured collarbone, so the season of the broken collarbone continues. We now add Barbara to the list, and he also had a bruised lower back, but he seems to be okay to come back for the rest of the flyaway races. So that's pretty impressive. You know, he's actually a pretty consistent finisher, which is not what he used to be known for. But ever since he got into MotoGP, he's been one of the most consistent writers, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, do you know what I just realized that we didn't mention is a writer that didn't participate this weekend, that being Carol Abraham, who did participate in free practice and qualifying, but due to a concussion that he suffered in the previous race weekend, he decided to sit it out. And he was in Japan. I mean, he was there. So
yeah. No, he went. He went. That's right. That first turn accident at Aragon, and I was actually in turn one when that happened. That was, and I saw him stand up and then immediately sit back down. So I knew that he had, you know, gotten some kind of bump on the head, because that's the kind of, you know, whoa, the world is totally spinning. Who am I again? Yeah, so he had to sit that one out due to concussion effects. And of course, Loris Caparossi wasn't there, but in his place was Damien Cudlin, who we've had on the show before, and as we mentioned last week. And we had two other wild cards, which was a good thing, because we had so much attrition that it would have been pretty pathetic if they weren't there. And those were Kazuki Akiyoshi and my man Shinichi Ito. Now, this was what I was going to ask earlier. Wasn't Akiyoshi also subbing for...
on a Ducati? No,
Yamaha? On a Yamaha at some point.
Yeah.
When Rossi... This the same Akiyoshi, right?
Yep, and it was Ito that raced on a Ducati a few years back.
Yeah, he did, yep. But anyway, so Kazuki... Akiyoshi was on the LCR Honda, but Shinichi Ito was on the Honda Racing Team, which is kind of like a generic label. And what a beautiful livery. Like really classic, you know, white with blue and red markup.
Old RC's 45 colors.
Exactly. So cool. Right. We're still on lap one, turn three. but then it kind of settled in with Stoner up front. Stoner, you know, was up front right from the beginning and looked totally informed to take this race. With, you know, Lorenzo and Pedrosa chasing. But... there was this crazy incident. Now, here's the thing that I'm really confused. I've heard that the way I saw it, it was down the back straight into T11. But then when I read about this incident, it was actually on that shorter straight between T3 and T4 towards T5. They both end up with a very sharp, heartbreaking area, and then going into the tunnel. So it's very easy to confuse the two. Those two sections, but it seemed like a bigger hill than the section between T3 and T5. Was it T5 where this happened with Stoner? I'm kind of like jumping ahead, but basically, you know, Casey Stoner went over a little ridge on lap five and got a head shake that we've seen him deal with before, and it didn't seem to unsettle him except for the fact that he lost his brakes because the calipers got all loose. So he had to start pumping the brakes, and he said that on the second grab, I think he expected a couple more pulls to be needed, but on the second grab, the brakes grabbed, and his rear wheel came up, and he had to let go again, and by that time, he had lost so much braking space that he was no longer going to be able to stop, so he had to run off, and he didn't come back on the track. By the time he came back on the track, he had lost 10 seconds and was like eighth or ninth. And suddenly Danny Pedrosa and Jorge Lorenzo were out front.
Yeah. Well, so that your average mere mortal would have pretty much just gone age. Yeah. It changes, totally changes leathers at that point.
It would have been done. Oh yeah. Yeah. It was, that's why I thought it was the back straight, because
it is the back straight.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just saw somebody writing that he came off of T5, but I was like, I thought it was T11.
No, back straight.
That's a freaking hairy place to run out of braking space, you know? I mean, Jesus, they're going so fast. All right, anyway, So that was, you know, we thought that was the end. But then Casey Stoner, you know, put the pedal to the metal and then just started passing people. And he was hard. He was a hard passer. He put a really hard pass on Hayden out of all people. Ended up in third place. Danny Pedros, of course, won. Jorge Lorenzo was 8 seconds behind. He did look like a challenge for a little while, but said that he started to slide around. He never really got the feel of the bike during the weekend, just as he wanted to, and decided to settle for second, especially knowing how far behind Stoner was. Had an amazing pace, but there was no way he was ever going to catch Lorenzo. Lorenzo Pedrosa never really lapped slower than he did. So he ended up third. And then, as usual, we had to look to Marco Simoncelli to provide some entertainment towards the latter part of the race, which he did. Him and Dovizioso had a great fight. This time, Simoncelli won. And It was a very, very fair, hard pass that he did on Dovi. Was it on the last lap?
It was on the last lap. In fact,
I think it was on the last lap.
It was one of those periods where when you're watching a race and you watch them flip over to the guys coming across the line. And you're waiting to see who's going to come around the last corner, and they don't show it until like the last millisecond. You're like, right. We should also mention that one other person that came from way, way back and actually was cutting lap times faster than leaders for a significant period of time was Ben Spies, who came in sixth after the pair of Italians. And that, you got to admit, that was a hell of a spirited ride, considering he did.
He was off right in the first, like with that incident with Rossi, so yeah, that was amazing. Yeah.
And not only that, but had gently put it on the floor in the kitty litter, so a great recovery.
Yeah, and Cal Crutchlow, I think, you know, he had a ride through and went off the track twice, and did not finish last. So he had another good ride, although 11th, I guess, is probably a little bit lower than he expected.
Well, that's 5 points, and frankly, this is another one of those races where if you wanted points, all you had to do was finish. We had five guys not complete the race. We had one guy that didn't even start, even though he qualified. And so you're talking 19 bikes total that were qualified for the race with a total of 13 finishing. So even with a thinned already grid, you know, you get these at this point, frankly, in MotoGP, unless, you know, you've got a bar dangling on the ground or sitting next to your bike, it's probably in your best interest to actually get back on and get going. And we've seen that time and again this season, you know, guys finishing with, you know, beat to shit bikes. Maybe not so much in the past where, you know, they're literally, you know, holding the clutch, pulling the clutch cable with two hands, but don't give up yet, you know. And yeah.
Those points may mean a lot. And a lot of if you look at the positions right now, so Casey Stoner lost 4 points to Lorenzo, but he's still 40 points ahead.
Right.
300 points exactly for Casey Stoner. 264 Jorge Lorenzo. And then it gets really interesting because Andrea Dovizioso has got just 1 point over Pedrosa, because Pedrosa won, and obviously Dovizioso finished fifth, so Pedrosa gained yet another big group of points, 14 points to be exact, and 1 point. This kind of illustrates your point, like, you know, you fall down and then you finish 15th. Hello, that's a point.
Yeah, indeed. And on top of that, we should mention that that does give little Danny wins in all three classes now.
Oh, at Motegi.
Al at Motegi, yeah. Well, yeah, of course. But, I mean, yeah, he'd won in 125s and 250s there in the past. Well, yep. I guess he's not going to get a Moto 2 win there unless something disastrous happens.
Right. And yeah, he did great. And it was his birthday. So nice little birthday surprise for him. I mean, I don't think he expected to finish ahead of Stoner. I really didn't. I really think Stoner was on a totally different pace than those guys.
Yeah, certainly the class of the field leading into it. If he qualifies as well as he has been of late, and you see that kind of thing happen, everybody's kind of walking into the weekend going, okay, who's going to come in second? And that was being said early on in the race. So it is what it is. When Casey's on fire, there's seems like this season there's not a whole lot of stopping him.
Yeah, yeah. And the sixth place finish and 0 points for Valentino Rossi means that Ben Spies is pulling away in fifth place. Valentino Rossi doesn't look like he's. I mean, he's gonna have to have a tough. It's gonna be tough for him to catch Spies at this point. Nicky Hayden seventh in the championship. Marco Simicelli in eighth, only 4 points behind Nicky now. Colin Edwards, who was kind of quiet this weekend. And Hiroshi Aoyama in 10th with 94. It was a bummer that Damien Cudlin fell because while he wasn't setting the best pace, I think he was running last. I think he gained something like 4 seconds a lap since he first got on the MotoGP bike. So he was definitely coming to understand the bike and what it was needed to ride it. You know, he was fighting with the other wild cards.
Yeah. He actually, when he crashed, he wasn't last. And I have to say that, he had a hell of a crash. It was very impressive. I'm glad you're feeling better, Damo. But you know, yeah, you're right. I mean, he was certainly coming to terms with the bike, and considering that he just, you know, come back from a superbike at Le Mans to stepping onto an unfamiliar and second-tier team such as Pramac, that's a big ask. And so the fact that he was able to bring himself up to speed that quickly and, you know, kind of gather himself about the bike, and I'm sure he was still learning and probably going, I haven't looked at lap times, but was probably going quicker just about every lap. Well done. Well done.
Indeed. The other followers were, obviously we mentioned Rossi, Barbera. Bautista fell trying to follow Stoner, I think. Stoner, when he came on his charge back to the field, you know, because Bautista was running in fourth at one point, and everybody was saying, man, he could actually be... he was running in third.
He was running in fourth when he crashed out.
Yeah, he was running fourth when he crashed, but at one point he was actually in third place.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Stoner had passed him about a lap and a half prior, and he was keeping fairly well on Casey's tail, and he'd just come through under the bridge. Was it under the bridge? No. It was, it was coming through under the second bridge, back out, heading back towards the paddock area, and he lost the front under braking. And it's interesting. All of the crashes this weekend, there weren't a lot that didn't beat up the bikes pretty well. and that was yet another one. His actually happened near the exit of the corner, and his bike, it was a fairly high speed crash, and he spent a lot of time sliding on the tarmac. And his bike sort of crashed out of sight, but you got a decent idea because it was still traveling at speed, skipping across the gravel trap, that it was going to meet an unhappy demise at the end.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And then of course, the other guy was Tony Elias, who was running seventh when he crashed, which would have been a fantastic finish for him.
You know, when I was watching Tony run in that position, part of me was going, all right, let me see. He's in Japan, and that's where they make the Bridgestones, and I wonder if they found a softer carcass somewhere.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, well, they can't do that, of course, but But Bridgestone does know the track extremely well. So they,
yes,
you know, and the range of tires is now widened, obviously, as the riders have asked for. So
I think Motegi was Bridgestone's first win, and I'm sure I'm wrong about that, but I think it may have been.
I think it was Tabata, 2004.
Yeah. Well, no. This is a circular argument.
Well, you know, Tomato was riding those Bridgestones. That was his thing. He was in Bridgestones, and Max Biaggi was in Michelin's.
Was that the Konica Minolta? Was that the Konica?
No, that was the Camel, the yellow bike.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. That's why I'm really kind of remembering that. Anyway, we could check on that later and see how wrong I am, but
trust me, we'll get plenty of email.
All right. Yeah, and again, you know, Casey Stoner does look like us going to Australia, where he's won since he's been on a factory machine. I don't think we're gonna. It's gonna be again a weekend of who's gonna finish second, and unless something happens to Casey Stoner, during the race, I think that's going to be the final outcome. But so I don't think Llorente is going to really be able to catch him. I think Llorente even has kind of admitted defeat already. He said that Casey's kind of in a class of his own at this point. But that doesn't mean he's going to stop, because Llorente does not give up. I mean, he is the honey badger.
Now you know that I keep up on international news quite a bit, you know, outside of the racing realm. And I seem to remember that there was, and bear with me here.
this is a real reach?
Yes, this is a reach. That there was some unmanned UAV, unmanned aerial vehicle, that was captured in Pakistan. It had crashed to the ground, that looked in some ways something like a seagull in its outline. And it was rumored to, you know, be a U.S. Army prototype. And I'm wondering if that was an in preparation for the Phillip Island round to try and, you know, perhaps...
They're going to try to blend in with the actual seagulls?
Yeah. I did say it was a reach. So, you know, if something happens, I take no responsibility for it. And I certainly don't blame my government for, you know, trying to support the three U.S. racers that are out there in the MotoGP championship. But you never know.
Thank you for that.
I'm just saying.
Yes, you're just saying. And, you know, here's I'm going to throw this one kind of out of left field. Do you think we're going to see Loris before Valencia? I mean, I'm sure we'll see him at Valencia for a farewell race, but do you think we're going to see him before then?
I think if he's healthy, he'll come back. Why not? He's had good results at Malaysia in the past. I think he'd like to come back in the race there as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. That's one of his favorite tracks.
Yeah.
Okay. Enough of MotoGP. Let's do this World Superbike thing, because we're already an hour in. And we were at Magny-Cours, where, barring miracle, Carlos Checo was going to be King Carlos by the end of race one, because the only way that was not going to happen was Marco Melandri would have to win, and Carlos Checo would have to finish no higher than 14th. Otherwise, well, what we'll do is let's go to some superbike news first, right?
Melandri
is now confirmed with BMW. And there was a funny comment that James Whittam made, which was that they gave the list of riders that are going to be on the BMW, the two BMW teams, to Troy Courser to kind of look over. And he's like, wait a second, where's my name?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not going to be riding for BMW next year. And I actually don't know where he's going to find a ride, because he's kind of faded. And he's, you know, he's not one of those guys that seems like he's going to get his mojo back as he chills out in his old age.
Let me throw a name at you to just counter that. Let me see, Carlos Checa.
No, that's exactly what I mean. Carlos Checa mellowed out for 4 years. It was coming. He just needed you know the right team to make it all happen together. But Corsers hasn't mellowed out at all. He's still crazy man.
Okay.
That was kind of my point.
I'd say that everybody had written Checa off for a period of time. It wasn't that long ago we were calling him careless checker. And,
yeah, that was dude. That's like 4 or 5 years ago. I don't think anybody's called him that since Valencia in 2007 and World Superbikes.
All right.
I think a lot of the coolness that's been associated with Checa has come with the fact that he was leading the championship pretty much from the beginning, and pulling away. It's very easy to be cool and relaxed when you're. In fact, the one time when the championship did close up, he started to get a little bit antsy and was making mistakes on the track. So, I think you have a point. But the point is, I have not heard of Corser being tied to any team, and there's a lot of there's teams leaving Superbikes, and it's kind of unsure what the grid's going to look like, and I certainly have I'm worried that we're not going to see him. I say worried, but then I'm just never a really big fan. I'll just admit it. So,
And look at it this way: it was only 3 or 4 days ago. So, how much news are you going to get?
True.
I did think it was interesting. I get his team newsletter or his personal newsletters that are actually put out by his PR folks. And one of the speculations that we've had for some time was that the BMW squad was looking at changing their electronics manufacturer or kit. And that was something that he mentioned post Super Pole in his newsletter. That was also re-mentioned at the same time that they were talking about how Melandri was going to be moving over to the BMW Italia squad. So, kind of interesting there.
Yep. Yep. No, don't rip me an asshole for this next one. I simply forgot to put the word rumored in front of it, okay?
Which what?
The Chaz Davies thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I was reading your comments in the notes. But because during race two, like while they were on the grid and they were doing the usual chatter, they were talking about the fact that Chaz Davies, that Park and Go have talked to Ducati about coming to World Superbike with Chaz Davies on board at Ducati. So... but that's just a rumor. It's definitely not a rumor or something that's being discussed. It's not like there's anything been signed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you want to take the same vein, there is a rumor that much like if you consider it that Chaz and Lucas Gasser running around in 2009 or sixes, that the factory Yamaha squad Superbikes may be reappearing next year for Park and Go as well. So, who knows?
In Superbikes?
Yeah. The same bikes are going to come back and run again next year, just not under a factory umbrella.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Like the Altea non-factory.
Or the, like I said, like the factory bike that Cal Crutchlow won his World Supersport title on, and the one that Chaz was racing this last weekend.
Yep, gotcha.
All right, so there's no doubt that that this year's World Superbike, you know, was kind of coming down to this weekend. We did get the calendar last week, and it looks like Imola may be off the calendar for next year. We're not sure yet. Those to be decideds are still kind of hanging in the air, and certainly we'll probably get a little bit more information. As you mentioned earlier, and we talked about last week, silly season has been kind of delayed. And I think a big part of that is probably down to the fact that the world economy sucks. And People are just trying to figure out how to get enough money to put together a team. And they kind of want to make sure as the season goes on a little bit later that they are picking the right riders. You know, instead of picking a rider that may finish the season strong and making that choice mid-season, you know, around the Laguna timeframe or Brno or whatever, that they're kind of taking a cautionary stance and want to make sure that they've got who they really want for the next year. And, you know, maybe even that rider is going to bring in a couple of sponsors. So it's kind of hard to tell. Anyway, we did have a great series of races at Magny Courageurs. I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Magny Courageurs is an interesting track because it's definitely built to be a car track. It has, you know, the fast sweeping corner going into a hairpin, then fast with sweeping corners going to a hairpin, and it repeats like four times, you know? So you don't expect it to, but just like China was kind of said, hey, you know, China is a shitty track for motorcycles and it always produces good motorcycle racing. Well, Magny Courageurs always produces really good motorcycle racing every year, and a lot of championships have been decided at this track. So it's like, you know, there was a huge crowd. Obviously, it was the chances of seeing a superbike champion crowned was super high. So a lot of people showed up for that. But I think it just always generates good racing for some reason. The layout of the track just works.
And I think part of that, too, is the fact that we go from Imola, to be honest, from a visual standpoint and also from a time zone standpoint, Imola and Magny Courageurs flow into each other really well in the calendar. And there's probably a little wordplay in there, but they kind of do. It almost seems like you could join those tracks at the hip and probably run them as a dual circuit, each with their own unique personalities. But I always enjoy coming to Magny Courageurs, and it certainly does. There's a couple of places on that track that are rather unique, and they've got, you know, a couple of additional corners, especially one that always produces a fair amount of epic drama, that being the final chicane, which I don't like from a build perspective, but from a track laydown perspective, but something always happens there. And in fact, that corner is decided. That corner itself has decided many championships as the years have gone
by. That's true. Yeah. That's true. Exactly. And it's funny because Le Mans and Magny Courageurs, which are the two most famous racetracks in France, they both have this same characteristic, which is that the final corner is right before the finish line,
yep.
Which means that, you know, there's stress and fighting to the very end, and then it's over. You know, it's not like they come out of the corner and it's all about the drive towards the far, far, far away finish line, like a Mugello, for example. It's like you get out of the corner and you win.
Yep.
Well, Assen is the same way too.
Yeah, I was just going to say Assen is exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyhow, Super Pole, we did end up with Jonathan Rahn pole. You may have the rest of the results there, but...
Laverty Checker Cameo at the first row.
And, I did not get a chance to watch Super Pole. I certainly did catch all of the races. Not race two so much. I didn't, much like you, I didn't get a chance to focus on that. And frankly, after the results of race one, not that it was anticlimactic, but... my time was spare, it was a pretty fun race to watch. We had Ray on pole, and when the red lights went out, Ray got probably a shit bag start. But once again, he was not Iannone'd and did not get called for it. Mark Aitchison had a pretty bad crash. Was that turn one or turn two? I can't remember.
It was really close to the beginning, but it was in a fast section because it was a hard crash.
And two guys that got off in front, and it's always fun to watch everybody pile into turn, the real turn one there, were Lavadier and Camier. those guys came off in front. It was a bit of a back and forth for a while, but certainly a spirited run during the first few laps until on the fourth lap, Jonathan Rea crashed out in turn 17. You remember these names more than I do, but complexly say.
That's a chicane that you hate, you know?
Yeah. I don't say I hate it. I don't like it from a build perspective. And from as a racer, I look at it and I go, you don't want to freaking deal with that. You want the flow of the circuit.
It's the Monza effect, you know, just stick a chicane in there.
I'm not going to put it into the Monza shit box, as it were, but,
I appreciate that, Jim, by the way. I appreciate that.
But that did change the complexion of the race a bit. As they moved on, certainly Carlos. And the one thing that you've mentioned offline, or at least offline from the show, and that I certainly noticed as the way race went on, when Carlos Checa regained the lead, it looked like the guy was racing in a very effortless fashion. Like incredibly relaxed. It wasn't work. It was, and especially when he got to the front, he was like, this is easy. And guess what? And certainly, you know, seemed to have the measure of everybody else. And it was frankly just really fun to watch for me. Later on the race, Melandri did go in a second, three laps from the end, got past both Haslam and Laverty. We could tell straight up pretty much that Eugene, well, he seemed to have a very good pace, even as the race went on about three or four laps before the end. Probably had a tire or something go off, probably the rear end. Seemed like he was losing grip coming out of the corners. Leon didn't seem to have the same issue so much as it was almost just a really hungry Marco. And he was
which actually, you know, bodes well, because that's the demon that BMW has been fighting all year, which is that their tires get destroyed. So maybe they're slowly starting to get, no pun intended, to grips with that whole tire wear issue.
Well, that'll bring us straight back to electronics, Jules, and
exactly. Yeah.
Because what they're saying is they if you can't control the TC, and they're not using anything, you know, considering that the BMW does come with traction control, but it's not anything they're using of the stock system. That's the kind of shit that's going to tear your tire up over time, and especially as the race wears on. So it seems like, you know, the BMW's got the engine, it's got a chassis that can win races. What do they need now? They need the right riders and they need the right electronics. So they're not that far off of the full package. I mean, if we looked at a year ago at the Kawasaki, we would be saying something similar, only that it didn't have the chassis to match up. And we know now that that bike's coming forward leaps and bounds. So next year could be very interesting if Yamaha does drop out of full factory support. Who knows? Ducati may be back with a factory squad next year. I would not be at all surprised to see that happen. Frankly, I think they almost need need isn't the right term, but I think they may do it just because this is a solid opportunity for them to, even though they, quote-unquote, won the title this year with a, quote-unquote, non-factory team. We know it's pretty clear that there was factory influence within that squad.
And as their MotoGP effort kind of faltered, they started opening the kimono a little more and more about, you know, their involvement, to the point of even having Preziosi at the rounds.
But, indeed.
The other thing is, you know, aren't they going to be interesting in a new superbike?
The 1199, which is not just what do they call in the industry? It's not a BNG bike, bold new graphics. This thing actually has a fair amount of substantial changes to it.
Yeah, exactly.
What we, from what we understand, at least, you know, it's still that big old honking V-twin in whatever L configuration it's designed in. And I think once we get word of what the true design is, we may have a good idea. It's kind of funny because we've been hearing all this testing of MotoGP and the Ducatis. We haven't heard hardly jack about 1199 and any testing they're doing for World Superbike next year. Maybe that's on purpose, huh?
Maybe. Maybe.
Anyway, so our race results, if we're ready to go on that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Your podium, that being Carlos Checa, Marco Melandri, and Liam Haslam, with a close chasing and resurgent Leon Camier. Eugene Laverty did drop back, as we mentioned before, back into fifth position. He was 5.5 seconds off of the pace of Carlos Checa in the end. Sylvain Guintoli, still doing a great job with that team, the Effenbert, I believe it is. Yet another beer sponsor. We appreciate that. Nori Haga, who did have a pretty good early run in race one, but dropped off later. Johan Lescor is still up there. Troy Courser, the departing, who knows where to land. BMW Italia rider Tom Sykes on the Paul Bird Motorsports ZX-10R. And on down the field, your non-finishers were Maxime Bergère, Jonathan Rea, Ezra Banenvidi, Jakob Smerts, and Mark Aitchison.
I kind of wanted to point out that, you know, as much as MotoGP gets pummeled for its small grid, this is a small grid.
It is.
And with this attrition rate, we only had 13 finishers.
True. Well, if I understand correctly, the CRT bikes may be running in both series next year. I should just let that float.
Dude, you got to tweet that out. You need to set up a new account, but then you're not going to have any followers. Damn it. Because everybody's going to know you're pulling their leg. But maybe we can get like David Emmett to post that. That'd be awesome. Wait a second. We just told everybody. Anyway.
Too bad it's not like May 29th or something like that. We could float that in. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah. Anyway, so obviously Carlos finished in first. That being said, he won the championship. You could tell coming across the line, he was very stoked, and frankly, the rest of the crowd was. He just going into the final chicane, he gave a wave, which I thought was funny. And he backed it off. Yeah, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, I love the fact that James Whittam, when he was commentating on it, said that was the worst wheelie he's ever seen.
And not to mention the stoppies.
And a really shitty stoppie, too. But then the bull jumped on and went for a ride. Yeah, it was fun to see. And it was, you know, I mean, think about the fact that I think Carlos Checa, before coming to Superbikes, had like 3 GP wins, a bunch of podiums. But, you know, after 15 years in GPs and then, you know, 4 years in World Superbikes, and now he's a world champion. I mean, it's awesome. It's really, really awesome.
Yep. And I believe he also had a birthday on Monday. I believe he turned 39. So happy birthday to you as well, Carlos. Great way to celebrate your birthday the day before.
Right on. Didn't know that.
Yeah. So congrats to him, and certainly a really fun podium ceremony. He was clearly stoked. I was surprised that he did not get as soaked with champagne as I was expecting. Although I did notice that he poured a fair amount down his gullet. and that was still one race to go. So,
yeah.
Race two. Yeah. Old. Yeah. Well, definitely old school, not full on Anthony Gobert, but, coming into, race two, which both of us kind of glossed over in a way. And to be honest, I would have to rewatch it again to remember it, 'cause I've watched a whole bunch of races since then. John, let me just run through the highlights in this one, because I think most of you out there already know it, Jules, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, just get the notes cool. That I put in there.
Cool. We did get a good run. You know, obviously the same guys up front, including Johnny Ray on pole. But he did make a mistake. And a couple of corners later, Eugene Laverty got him with a little bit of contact. Those two have known each other for ages, are good pals, both on and off the circuit. Maybe not at that particular point of contact in time. But he did have a technical DNF for Johnny on lap 14. While in the meantime, Checa had also picked up the pace and passed Eugene Laverty for the lead. I don't remember.
Do we know what the DNF was?
I don't know, and I usually have those kind of answers for you. Technical, I'm assuming it was. Remember, this was the second weekend they were running the new electronics on the bike, including the fly-by-wire system. He had the problem with the battery pickup at Imola. I don't know if it was electronic or not. Perhaps that was something that failed him, and I haven't read anything since then. And I'm sure our astute readers will write in and tell us, and then we'll pass it on in the next episode. Jules, I totally forgot, and I can't remember the move that was made by Melandri underneath Laverty into Adelaide. Do you remember that second on the last lap?
Yeah, you know, well, that's the first of the hairpins, you know, and Melandri, you know, went on the inside, which is, you know, the typical way you pass in there. But if you do go in on the inside, you have to, you know, obviously go further out on the outside, and the other guy can get a better drive out of there into the next series of flowing fast corners. So to make sure that didn't happen, he made sure that Laverty didn't get the drive by basically blocking that position, that little spot that Laverty would have gone in. So it was a kind of a hard move because it was almost like a block pass.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he's already lost the championship, and he's pretty safe in second. But I think he really just wanted to show, you know, his best.
Right. You know? Right.
So, and the best is his teammate. So, you know, the guy you always want to beat. So can't really blame him. It ended up being a clean move, but I don't think Laverty was too happy about it.
Yeah. Well, and as you mentioned, you know, we know that Marco has been signed for next year. Eugene has not yet. And he's under consideration by a whole bunch of people. One of those also being Tech 3, although far down on the list, it's unknown at this point. Clearly, he'll have a ride next year. The question is who he'll be riding for and in what championship.
So in a way, Melandri and Laverty are kind of like passing ships. You know, one guy comes in for MotoGP, the other guy's maybe going to MotoGP. You know, I think Melandri probably has a little bit of bitterness about it, although he definitely found a good home in Superbikes because we keep forgetting he's a rookie.
Yeah, true. Oh, yeah, good point. You know? Very, very good point. Well, I mean, how much can you call somebody a rookie even if it's their first year in a Superbike?
When they're stepping down to the bike, yeah, but there's a lot of tracks he's never been to. So, you know,
true.
I think Marco has shown that, well, we all knew that. He's a very, very, very talented rider who had a bad turn of luck by riding a Ducati at one point in MotoGP.
And a Kawasaki after that, perhaps.
Well, that's what I mean. Once he rode a Ducati, he got jinxed.
We'll blame it on bad management. I think once he found himself an extremely hot girlfriend, the world seemed to turn around for him. So you better win. So your top 10 in race 2, Checa, Melandri, Laverty, Haslam, Guintoli, another great finish. Be interesting to see if that squad, Effenberg folks, actually get some the 1199s for next year. Leon Kamir, who did have a rather promising bit going earlier in the race and kind of backed up. You on the scores, Ayrton Badovini, Troy Corser, and Nori Haga. And I kind of heard some whispers and rumors that Nori may have had some upgraded equipment for Imola. I don't know if that's true. But we did also have a fair amount of guys go out in race two. Robbie Rolfo, Jonathan Ray, Mark Aitchison, Michelle Fabrizio, and Tom.
Yeah, Aitchison pulled in actually just due to pain from the previous crash.
Yep. As well as Fabrizio and Sykes. Fabrizio is having a bad time. Who knows if Suzuki will even be back next year, or at least not, maybe not under the same All-Stars Suzuki banner. So we'll have to see how that goes. But only 12, in the end, only 12 finishers. Once again, a great reason to get back on your bike if you can and finish the race up.
Yeah, yeah. Smirtz did not start. We've got to mention that his fall in race one was a really, really hard looking. He was one of those high sides where he held on a little too long, so he got slammed, and so he didn't start. Although I heard he's fine. I don't think there's anything permanent damage or anything like that, or even long term damage. But he did not start.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that Checo won with a rather commanding lead, 107 points over Marco Melandri. Guys,
it's
currently
not over yet. There's still one round left, two more races.
Yeah. Checo certainly has, you know, cemented the championship. So, you know, no doubt that is a done deal. In second and third are teammates Marco Melandri and Eugene Laverty. Biaggi, who's been out of late, but sounds like he may come back, is in fourth. Leon Haslam in fifth, and so on and so forth.
It's actually important to note that, because Laverty, even though he didn't get those podium finishes that he looked like he was going to get, he did finish very well, and so he went way past Max Biaggi. I mean, he was way behind Max Biaggi, and now is 2 points ahead of Biaggi.
Yep. Max certainly will be back and vying to see what he can get for next year under his belt.
Port him out, dude. Laverty at Port him out is going to be hard to beat for Biaggi.
He may be, but Ducatis go really well at Port him out too.
Sorry?
Ducatis do extremely well at
Port
him out.
No, I'm saying Biaggi, though. Biaggi versus Laverty.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we have seen Biaggi on the Aprilia at Port him out run off in turn one, four or five times in a race.
Exactly. It's not a racetrack that is forgiving of his particular Achilles foot, which is running wide.
No. So number seven, congratulations to Carlos Checa, old dude's rule. And I was very stoked to see that and pumped for him. And he certainly seems like a happy camper in many ways. We did have another championship to perhaps decide, at Magny Cours, certainly because, of the mechanical fault that Chaz Davis suffered, with four laps to go at Imola. And, he had some difficulties here in qualifying as well, but managed to, I believe, get himself fourth on the grid with Lucas, or fourth or eighth. I don't know. It wasn't the best qualifying effort from him, but certainly he did not have to finish the race in first place with Fabian Frey following not close enough behind. Kind of a skip and a jump away.
With one round left, all he had to do was win by 10 points.
Yes.
I mean, sorry. I mean, Fourier would have had to beat him by 11 points.
Right. And just as a reminder that the Supersport guys only run one race per weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
In the end, we did have Bull Scassa, who had a blistering pace in qualifying, and certainly kind of had worked out the same thing at the previous round. And he said right off the bat that he was going to do what he could to help Chaz and the team gain the championship this year. And he did exactly that through the race. He kind of protected Chaz from primarily Brock Parks in the beginning and later on with Sam Lowes, and only until he found an opportunity to safely pass Chaz And he predicted, or not predicted, but he said at the end of the weekend that he definitely wanted to win the race. And he eventually went on and did that with Sam Lowes in second, Brock Parks in third. Those were your podium finishers. However, the man that stole the show of the weekend, that being another seven, Chaz Davis. And he had yet another really cool and fun and slow, I might add, maybe even slower than Cheka, victory and championship lap to get around the circuit. And that was way cool to see as well. And I'm stoked. I'm stoked for Chaz. I'm stoked for all our Welsh or Welshian followers out there, as well as those in the far, far north of England.
Or Martin, especially.
Martin especially, he was very, very pumped just around the corner from him. And well done, well done. And Foray finished down in eighth. And so there was no chance that he was even going to come close to challenging Chaz for the championship at this round. So we've got two decided. We've actually got, I believe, Superstock 1000 was also decided for Ducati, the same squad that runs Altea. Yeah, so pretty cool, pretty cool.
Yeah, and unceremoniously, let's close out the show. The season finale at Brands Hatch is coming up this weekend. John Hopkins is leading that. I keep forget what they call that.
It's the run to the finish, dash to the end, top six guys. Battle it out. And the cool thing is it is a three
shootout.
Race shootout. Yeah, I think they stole that from NASCAR or some other series,
right?
You know, this is still way tight, and clearly there's still battles going on down in the field, especially for the Evo Championship, that being the super stock ish version of the superbikes, which run during the same races. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you did mention John Hopkins. He should be fully healed as far as his fingers go. Tommy Hill in second, Josh Brooks, Shane Byrne, Michael Laverty, Eugene's brother, in fifth, and Rio Kinanari, the returning champion from last year. It's pretty far down. Realistically, the two guys that are probably going to be battling for this, bar anything serious happen, are going to be Hopkins and Hill.
Oh, yeah.
John Kirkham, who of late has kind of had a resurgence on the Samsung Crescent Suzuki bike, has been offering support to Hopper in a protective role. And it wouldn't be surprising to see him up there maybe getting in the midst of these battles. Once again, it is a three-race weekend with a bank holiday coming up. And so we'll, after this coming weekend, we'll have yet another championship crowned.
Yeah, yeah. And the staple from the early, or the first half of the 2000, Paul Bird Motorsport BSB team is coming back. And I guess they're also vying for a CRT spot or something, because there's an article that I read at MCN that says that they're going to have a, they're going to try to get a bike in a MotoGP. Now, I thought that those contracts were already handed out. I mean, the invitations.
I believe that they had been, but I believe there was also a unnamed squad on a Kawasaki CRT bike with a, what frame?
Ah, it's unnamed. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
And
probably they would figure out a way to let other bikes in there since they're not going to turn bikes away from the grid.
Exactly. Exactly. You know. So I would not be surprised to see them show up there. That is kind of spreading things a bit thin, especially with the European coinciding rounds. But it's not like it hasn't been done in the past, especially with squads that did not have a shed load of money, like, let's say, Crescent Suzuki, spread mm-hmm. between MotoGP and BSB. So clearly it can be done if done with fiscal prudence, which is kind of the word of the day, isn't it? And especially for a squad that might be returning to the Premier Championship. And we've seen of late that PBM, that being Paul Borden Motorsport, can put together a winning effort. The question being if they can do it consistently. And it will be fun to see if they can pop down to BSB and do that. I watched an interview today, Jules, actually just before we talked, from way back in May. Just as an aside here, that was with Jeremy Burgess. It was done with Daryl Beattie from One, which is the Australian motorsports channel, where he was asked a direct question of JB, what do you think about the CRT teams? Are they going to present any sort of a challenge? And he was pretty firmly in negative land. And I think we know that. The question being, how much of an impact will that have? And will it be profitable from a sponsorship opportunity standpoint for a team to step in there? And thinking back to this possible commentary on Paul Bird's Motorsport, who knows? We're not going to know anything until the CRT bikes start hitting the track. With the exception of like Suter's BMW powered machine, which has been making bounds, if not leaps, forwards to competitiveness. So I think we'll have to see where that goes.
All right, man. I think we're done and faded. Yep. It's time to fade out.
Yeah, well, you faded.
Yeah.
All right, can we get a good ribbit before you go?
I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can get quite the froggy out, but yeah.
Motopod is not affiliated with Darren Motorsports. All right, let's
do it,
rock,
Jim.
Dude.
Do it. Dun, 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 dun. Thank you. All right, everybody. Ciao. See you next week.